out of the depths, I cry to you, Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. If you, Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, so that we can, with reverence, serve you. I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits, and in his word I put my hope. I wait for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning, more than watchmen wait for the morning. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love, and with him is full redemption. He himself will redeem Israel from all of their sins.
Good morning, friends, both here in the room and for those who are joining us online. If you haven't been with us over the last couple of weeks, do check back on YouTube to see the last 2 weeks in this series called Bend, Don't Break, looking at mental health, emotional well-being. And as we kick off, I wonder if you've ever been in one of those situations where you've been on a journey, but you've been really unprepared for that journey. Perhaps in what you were wearing. Maybe you were wearing flip-flops trying to walk a mountain. Or maybe you were out for a walk in your lovely new Gucci sweater, and then it absolutely pours. I have a friend who was unprepared. He was going to do a marathon, worked in London, and it was one of these overnight marathons starting late in the evening, and he went to work on that Friday and forgot all his kit, and so basically had a choice. Do I keep on trying to do the marathon, or do I not and forfeit it? And he thought, well, I'll give it a go. So he went to do the marathon in his suit, very unprepared, got through with quite a few chafing moments for those that have ever done a marathon. But I wonder if for many of us life is like that, that there are seasons, times, some of us even decades, where we feel so unprepared for what life is throwing at us, where the journey that we are on is very different to what we were expecting, and we feel we can't navigate it with the kit or the equipment that we've got. Well, as we continue this series called Bend, Don't Break, today we're thinking about what it looks like to be well prepared on the journey of life. And in the last 2 weeks, we've helpfully debunked a few myths about mental health. And then last week, beautifully, Judy helped us to how do we respond when we're actually really struggling, and perhaps even at breaking point. And today, we're changing gears slightly, and we're thinking about what it looks like to cultivate resilience in our lives. Now, I know that for some of us, even that word resilience is a word that we have heard that feels like it's a bit of a stick to beat us with. In a work context, come on, you need to develop resilience. Or even some of us have been told by our friends, those closest to us, come on, you just need to be a bit more resilient, toughen up a bit. And so even today, as we're thinking about resilience, we are worried. And can I say, please, don't hear that this morning. This morning is not a stick to beat us with. If you're hearing the title of this series, Bend, Don't Break, as a you shouldn't break, please, that's not what the title's about at all. Rather, the title is about, for those of us who know, we can see signs in our life, we may not yet be at breaking point, or even if we can't see signs, we just wonder if we actually need to cultivate resilience so that we don't, if at all possible, get to breaking point. For those of us right now who we know there are things that we could change, little moments to change, to help cultivate resilience in a healthy way. That's where we're going today. And to kick us off, every week we've been looking at some different stories. And we're going to share a little story from Linda, who's not with us today. Linda is part of a wider story, but we've got a little moment which she speaks very beautifully about navigating some of the most challenging times in life. Let's listen to Linda's story.
Hello, everybody. My name is Linda. I've been part of the Riverside family since the very beginning. I was in a situation where I felt completely overwhelmed. It was a family situation. I was crying out to God, why is this happening to me? I can't deal with it. I thought it must be because I was a rebellious teenager, because I was a failure as a mother. And then very clearly, and not out loud, but like a shout in my mind, I heard God say, because I trust you. And that wasn't something I could have made up. He said he trusted me. He trusted me with the situation, with the person that I was dealing with. And it changed the whole perspective of my life. I realized God wasn't punishing me. It wasn't that God didn't care. And incredibly, God had chosen me to walk this difficult walk. Now, it didn't make it easier, but it somehow had a different shape around the situation, rather than feeling like the whole of life was going to crack up and break down. Suddenly, I knew that God was with me in it. A bit like Psalm 23, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, he is with me. And that was really a key point in my life. Now, 25 years on, the journey is actually just as difficult. There's still situations going on. But I've learned that walking with God is like climbing a mountain. You start in the foothills. You know, it's lovely. There's a smooth path. There's a lovely babbling brook next to you. There are lush trees and growth. And it's all beautiful. And as you carry on, the incline starts to get a bit steeper, but you can manage it. It's still fine. But then it gets rockier and harder and steeper, harder to keep going. But you're still doing okay. And you reach then the point where you feel, I cannot go on. It's got so steep and so hard. And you stop and you think, I can't do this. And you catch breath and to have a rest. And you turn around and then you look and you see the view. And you see how far you've come. And it's amazing. And somehow, when you see how far you've come, you know there is no going back. You've made it so far. And somehow that inspires you to keep going to the end. And as I'm reaching a certain age, for me, the end is being with Jesus for eternity. That becomes more and more where I'm going. It's the hope that keeps me going. So thank you for listening.
I love that image of the journey of life being like climbing a mountain. And sometimes we feel like the image on the right, where it's all good. We're with others, those closest to us. The sun is shining. It's beautiful. We're resting. We're looking out. But other times it feels a bit like the image on the left, where we feel very alone and it feels very precarious. And we feel that we may not make it, and one wrong step could lead to disaster. And the passage of the Bible, Psalm 130, that was read to us earlier, is a beautiful psalm that is one of what are called the Psalms of Ascent. If you, in the Bible, if you've got it on your phone or looking at it in the Bible at home, at the beginning it says, after Psalm 130, it says, a song of ascents. And probably what this was is a number of psalms from Psalm 120 onwards, where people, as the pilgrims went to Jerusalem to the festivals, these were the songs they sang as they walked up to the Jerusalem on the hill. And the Bible has some hugely helpful things for us today as we talk about cultivating resilient lives. Three different ways we're going to cultivate resilience. And we're going to get to the psalm in a moment. But can I say, as we jump into these three things, it's occasional where, as a preacher, you're speaking and you feel completely ill-equipped to preach on the subject that you are doing, even though you've planned the series. Much of this I know in theory, and much of it I do not put in practice. And I long to develop more resilience in my life. Hear my heart as we're going through. This is not me saying, come look at how I do it. We are a community, a church family, including you guys at home. Let's walk together in this so that we might cultivate resilience together as friends, as sisters and brothers. And can I say, if you are at that stage where it's, in a sense, you wish you had cultivated more resilient lives earlier, and you know you're way beyond that, and these little things may not help that much, as we've said every week, please do seek real help, professional help if needed. So firstly, here's the first way we might cultivate resilience. And it's this, cultivating physical resilience. The Mind website, Mind is the mental health charity, they've got this brilliant phrase, it's on the screen. The brain is like an engine. If you run it too hot all day, every day, without checking the oil and water, it breaks, like every part of your body. If you kept on running and running and running and running and running, eventually it would break. And there is this key reality for some of us that a way to cultivate resilience is less in the big themes and more in just some physical activities, being outdoors more, cultivating healthy patterns of regular sleep, looking at our diet, exercise. All are essential, not extras that we can sort of excuse in our 21st century world. During COVID, 2/3 of British people said that regular exercise was what helped their mental health during the pandemic. Like all aspects of our body, we grow and we develop resilience as we flex muscles. But we might think, well, that's great, but that doesn't sound very spiritual. We're in church, Tim. But I think we overlook some of the bits where God talked very clearly about physical well-being. I love the story of Elijah. Elijah is under immense pressure, fleeing, being chased. We've got this beautiful moment in the book of 1 Kings in the Old Testament, which is the kind of half of the Bible before Jesus. And there's this moment where he's in real turmoil. And it says this, Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. He himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush. Not sure what that is. I don't think it's a bush made out of brooms. Anyway, he sat down under it and prayed that he might die. Then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep. All at once, an angel, God is in this place, touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked around and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. Friends, can I say some of us know deep down we just need to physically rest and have decent diet, stop the Mackey D's for a while, whatever it might be, just rest. A book came out recently by a sleep scientist called Why We Sleep, the guy called Matthew Walker. And in it, he particularly zones in, obviously, on sleep. And this is what he says. Sleep is the single most effective thing we can do to reset our brain and body health each day. So it can be easy to think about all the spiritual things, all the amazing, profound things. But frankly, some of us need to cultivate regular patterns of sleep. And apparently the research says it is the regularity that is key, as well as the length. Sleep, is, if you like, is our nightly declaration that we aren't God, because we let God do the healing in our body, let God take care of all the other things. Now, I know some of us, this is a massive issue and a real battle for which we need extra help. But for some of us, we know this is one area that we could do a little bit of work relatively simply to help our own emotional and mental well-being. So when was the last time you just rested? With all of the things that you have to do, when was the last time you just went for a little walk or had a good meal or just snoozed in an afternoon? Physical resilience. The second thing is this then. As well as cultivating physical resilience, I think there's a really important thing about cultivating what you could call relational resilience. And in the psalm that was read, there were two aspects to this about the way we relate to other people. There is the importance of us giving out and serving others, and the importance of having those around us who give out and serve us. Here it is in Psalm 130. Do you notice the two little bits? The psalmist writes, "So that we can with reverence serve you." It's really important, he says, to be involved in giving out. And one of the things that can go so quickly when we're navigating emotional or mental challenges is that it very quickly becomes about me. And yet we a great way is to serve others to develop that resilience, to keep on thinking of others' needs. But then also that's the phrase where he talks about, I wait for the Lord more than watchmen long for the morning. If you imagine that phrase, imagine in the army, the military, you've got that group of soldiers and one of you is watchman. The rest can sleep. And imagine how terrifying it must be. I saw a movie years ago about Vietnam. How terrifying it would be if you're the one who's on the watch in the middle of the night. And you know you are responsible for those around. So you've got to stay awake. How desperate would you be for the dawn and that first flickering moment where light begins to come on? We'll come to that in a moment. But there's an element, therefore, of who is your watch person? Who have you got around you that is that watch person? This great quote from a beautiful book by a guy named Mark Maynall, which he called, when he talks from the psalm we looked at last week, it's called When Darkness is My Only Friend. I love this quote. I desperately needed people living in the real world, in the same world as me. Above all, I needed friends, not fixers. Who is it in your world who is just a friend, who will love you and walk with you in the good times and the challenging ones? I remember when my wife Claire was navigating her cancer. I had a mate who phoned me regularly every Saturday morning. Say, how you doing, mate? Sometimes it was just banter. Sometimes it was just, how you doing? But regularly, I didn't ask him to. Beautiful act of being a friend. Who have you got? And I think for some of us, we think, well, it's fine for them. They've got a partner or they've got a family or they've got friends. But actually, that's where church comes in. And I wonder if in our culture, some of us, we may have marriages where we're struggling a bit because we've presumed that this idea of the soulmate means that that person has to be all. And therefore, we've let slip cultivating our other friendships, our other relationships. Part of the beauty of church is getting to give out, to serve others, to put others' needs before us, as well as therefore having others around us that will be our rock when we're beginning to crumble. And can I say at this moment, I know, because I know a few of you, some of us are rescuers. So that quote about not being fixers, we struggle with it because we see a person that we love and we want to help. And some of us know that therefore we are so much rescuers that we will be willing to sacrifice self in an unhealthy way. I love this Charlie Mackesy moment. You've seen them all, I'm sure. You're so kind to me, said the boy. I hope you're as kind to yourself. And if you've ever been on an aeroplane, you know there's that moment where they're doing the prep work. And if the oxygen masks come down and it says, if you are a parent, put your own mask on first before you try and put your child's mask on. Some of us need to hear that today, that we know the person we are walking with, maybe even the person we are married to, someone in our friendship group or family that we are supporting, that are really struggling. And we know we can see the signs in our own self that we're beginning to struggle emotionally or mentally as a result. Friends, put the oxygen mask on yourself. Maybe a question for the panel next week. How do we do that? Well, so physical resilience, relational resilience, and then finally then, I think there's something really clear in the pages of the scripture about cultivating spiritual resilience. Some of this might be difficult to say, but I'm going to say it. I thought the way Linda beautifully reflected on this. I am convinced after many years of leading pastorally, but also in my own life, that actually some of God's most beautiful work is done in the deepest darkness. And some of us in that place of darkness cry out, God, where are you? And wonder if therefore it's somehow our fault or if he's abandoned us. And actually the opposite is true. You may not feel his presence, but he is doing beautiful, deep work in you. Listen to the psalmist. Out of the depths I cry to you, Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. That word, depths, is like a storm. You can imagine it deep, deep down. This is deep darkness, deep pressure, deep brokenness. He's drowning. with life. And every little wave, every little hit just goes over his mouth and is too much. So out of the depths, he cries out to God. I saw a documentary a little while ago on drowning. And it was really, really interesting. And I say this to us as a church community, because I think some often we think those who are most close to drowning are the ones who are crying out most desperately. But all the research says those closest to drowning have then been silent because all their energy needs to go into trying to do all they can to keep their head above the water. And it may be that some of us are aware there are people around us who've given up crying, given up shouting out, and perhaps they need a little call or a visit or just a chat or a walk, whatever it might be. And part of the challenge of our age, I think, both in church world and in society in general, particularly for people of my generation, I'm in my 40s, if you want to kind of work out what that is. I know I look like I'm in my 60s.
Be kind to yourself, Tim.
Thank you very much. Part of the challenge of our day, I think, is the desire and the expectation that life should be full of adventure, success, pleasure, and comfort. Perhaps we've got the idea that when life isn't that, it's somehow unusual. And therefore, either we internalize it is our fault, something we've done, like Linda said, or we blame others. Whereas in reality, perhaps we all need to expect and normalize difficulty in life. Friends, if you've never really gone through a season of real hardship, you are quite unusual. Be thankful, and it may come. And friends, if you are right now, you are not alone. You are with the vast majority of the planet. As Samuel Beckett says in his play Endgame, you're on Earth. There's no cure for that. Now hear this, please. I'm not downplaying the challenge of our mental health at moments like that, but what I am trying to do is to free us at that moment where we're most desperate, to free us from the idea that somehow it's something we have done, or it's our fault, or unusual. I love this quote from Herman Bavinck. The human heart in which God has put eternity is so huge that all the world is too small to satisfy it. Even if everything goes hunky-dory and beautifully well, it will never be enough for us. And so the psalmist says, if you, Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand? But with you, there is forgiveness, so that we can with reverence serve you. I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits for him. And in his word, I put my hope. There's two aspects to that. Firstly, for some of us, putting our hope in his word is a simple reminder for some of us how important it is to regularly be reading the Bible. Not out of duty. I know the moment we say that, some of us hear, oh, pressure, pressure, duty, duty, duty. No. It's just so that in those dark times, there's a rhythm and a pattern so that hope can still come in because of a resilience that has been cultivated. Cling on to those promises in the Bible that some of you know. And if you're new to faith or you're just exploring it, friends, the Bible has been tried and tested for thousands of years by huge amounts of humanity. It is worth giving a go, friends. Way better than the latest self-help book, dare I say. But there's a different kind of word in which we put our help, not just the pages in the Bible. In the beginning of John's Gospel in the New Testament, which is the bit about Jesus, we read this. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. He's talking about Jesus. And so as we look at Jesus, it changes how we see our lives and even changes our resilience. I want to just mention for a moment, those of us within Riverside who might be experiencing what you could call moral injury. Now, I don't know if you know what that is. Moral injury is when you are involved in a system in which you are committing acts that cause you moral harm, or you're in a system where the moral harm has been done against you. And I hear this a lot from those who are in education, those who are in the healthcare profession, those who are in local authority staff, where you know very well that all you want to do in your job will never be enough to provide for what you long to do. And even some of you, you know the system that you're in is somehow causing harm and it causes you emotional distress. How do we navigate that, friends? We look at Jesus. Why? Well, the psalmist goes on. I love this. I wait for the Lord more than watchmen wait for the morning. Put your hope in the Lord. For with the Lord is unfailing love and with him is full redemption. Friends, if you are overwhelmed with either guilt or shame yourself because of your own circumstances, or even the system you're part of, see who God is. See the God on the cross who is full of unfailing love, never-ending compassion to you as well as to those you're trying to serve. The good news of Jesus is not that we have profound certainty in him. The good news of Jesus is in his unfailing love for us. And I know some of us in the darkest moments wondering if our faith is faltering, or maybe even we're kind of exploring God, but we know our past and we're wondering whether I've done too much, my past is too bad. Hear these words. Put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love, and with him is full redemption. The hope is in the Lord, not in that the Lord will change circumstances. He is our hope. And as I come to a close, I want to mention something that I'm going to call palliative hope. You'll know the difference between, I don't know, I'm not a professional, kind of normal medicine and palliative medicine. Normal medicine is trying to fix the problem. Palliative medical care is when the problem can't be fixed, and so it's making the patient comfortable and peaceful as much as possible, even to the point of death. Hope without improvement in circumstances. And I wonder if in our church circles and even in society, yes, we know that God heals. We know that God breaks through. We know that God does amazing miracles. But sometimes he doesn't. And therefore, we need to cultivate a palliative hope. That as Linda said, one day, we will look back and see how far we have come. One day with Pierre. Dancing, rejoicing before the Jesus who rose from the dead. One day with our frail emotions, our frail mental health, our frail bodies, we will see Jesus in all his glory. That kind of hope that carries us through regardless of his circumstances change. As I close, I love this quote from Japanese theologian Kazuki Kiyama. He imagines us at the end of our lives, coming face to face with Jesus, and he imagines what Jesus will say. Beautiful words that some of you need to hear. You've had a difficult journey. You must be tired and dirty. Let me wash your feet. The banquet is ready.